Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another exciting edition of the CNC Football Factory. This is your host, Carlos Sardinas. I am going to be joined by my co-host at some point on the radio podcast later down the road with Mr. CJ DeSimone, who is en route to the studio, or otherwise known as driving through McDonald's drive-thru for breakfast before the cutoff at 10:30. We have a very special and exciting show for you today. We're joined by a good friend of the show. It's been really a while since we've had him on, Marvin Powell III. Some of you Jets fans may recognize the name. His father, Marvin Powell, was a great offensive lineman for the New York Jets back in his heyday. Marvin Powell III, or MP3, has also had quite an illustrious career as a USC Trojan, played in the NFL with the Saints, and we'll get a little bit of his background going on. It looks like I'm being joined now, so I want to welcome to the show Marvin Powell III.
Hey, Carlos. How's it going, buddy?
Hey, Marvin. We're getting you on right now. I can hear you. Hopefully the website is cooperating with me because it's going a little slow, so I'm not sure if you're on mute or not. Okay. It looks like we're live now. So, Marvin, welcome. Thanks for joining us again, man. It's been a minute since we talked. So, how have you been?
I'm doing really well. Thank you very much. Very excited about this upcoming season for the Jets and Trojans. And doing really well. Thanks.
All right, Marvin. So, like I said, it's been a minute, and we've picked up quite a few followers since the last time we talked.
Cool.
So can you give everyone just a little bit of breakdown on your background with the Trojans, and also your NFL playing days? Just a quick synopsis so everyone can get more familiar in case they don't quite remember.
Gotcha. Well, as you said, first off, I'm the son of Marvin Powell Jr., who played for the Trojans in the mid-70s and played for the Jets in the late 70s, early 80s. Myself, I played for the Trojans. I played for USC in the late 90s between Keyshawn and Carson Palmer, and then had a chance to play with the Saints in 99 and a little bit after that. But, that's it in a nutshell.
Right. Well, again, thanks for joining, bro. It's awesome having you on. And given your history with the Trojans, I wanted to ask you, and just jump right into it, draft talk.
Yeah.
Leonard Williams out of USC, obviously you follow your team, your alma mater, the Trojans.
Oh, yeah.
So you must have definitely seen a lot of film on him. I just wanted to get your thoughts on what you think of the selection, what you think he could bring in the future for the New York Jets.
You know, I've watched him play over, I guess, the last two, 3 years, and the kid has been just super athletic. You know, really, he reminds me of, if Jet fans know, he reminds me of a Darrell Russell. Darrell Russell was the number two pick in the NFL draft to the Raiders back in 96, and he was a three-time Pro Bowl player, and I played with him at USC. But, you know, D. Russ, just like Leonard Williams, you know, big, tall guy, 300-pound guy, just super quick, super athletic, can dribble a basketball, can dunk a basketball, and the kid is just explosive. I mean, Leonard can give us, you know, opportunities, you know, on the edge, on the inside. And when you have a guy like that, such a difference maker, such an athlete, I mean, it allows for a lot to happen up front. So I'm excited for the Jets. I'm excited for USC. Obviously, just another great player, but he's going to be great, man. I'm really excited about him, definitely.
So I wanted to get your thoughts. One of the big things that goes around with the Jets fans is it's trying to figure out how does he get incorporated into a defensive line that's already pretty stacked in its own right. And I want to get your thoughts on how that could potentially play out.
You know, honestly, I mean, I've always believed that at O-line and D-line, you can never be too stacked. That's just the reality of it, man. You know, it's, you know, with those big guys, man, they get hurt so often, and so much can happen within 16 weeks. The reality is you can never have too many of them. So, you know, whether – and with Leonard, You know, he could play inside, he could play outside, he could play a 3-4, he could play a 4-3. And the reality is, you know, Todd Bowles, who I've never met, but I understand is a really good coach. Actually, one of my good friends now is with the Jets. Dalen McCutcheon is the assistant DB coach, and he's my roommate in college for 4 years. And he speaks really highly of Todd Bowles. But, you know, when you have multiple players that are that good on the D-line, you find a way to make it work, period, you know. And they will, because you can't have too many good players. There's no such thing as that, especially with the big guys.
All right. Well, thanks, Marvin, for that insight. And it appears that my co-host has finally made it from the McDonald's drive-thru. CJ, are you on the line?
Yeah, I am. I've made it back from the abyss in one piece.
Welcome to the C&M show right now. It's Carlos and Marvin. You're just going to have to sit back and listen.
There you go. Welcome to the show.
We're talking a little bit of NFL draft. Marvin just got on here. And, I want to talk more than just the Leonard Williams pick, although obviously Marvin, mm-hmm. having his background as being a Trojan, follows the team and has definitely seen enough of him over the past couple of years to offer some great insight into that pick. There's some other great additions, though, this draft. The next round is Devin Smith, a real quick speed burner type out of Ohio State.
Right.
Robert, what is your assessment of that selection?
You know, Devin Smith, to me, is Wesley Walker, to be honest with you, man. You know, playmaker, deep threat, speed guy. You know, you watched Ohio State this year, especially toward the end of the year in the big games, go to him, you know, time and time again. And against big competition and big games, he makes big plays. I love it. We need it. You know, I think offensively we could use a lot of help, and adding him just really helped out a lot, man. So I'm excited about just big play potential, especially down the field. We need it on the outside, and I think he can bring it.
Absolutely. Yeah, he gives us that dimension of speed that wasn't quite addressed, but now I think, you know, seeing some of the film at a rookie camp, he's uh-huh. impressing already in just a couple days. He's making some circus catches, really good at tracking the ball when it's thrown deep. He's excelled at that.
Yeah, no, and that's great. We need that. I mean, we added a couple of guys, obviously, in the offseason. But to get a young guy that's been proven, you know, at the amateur level, that can come up and just grow into that position, and as you said, had a great mini camp, rookie camp. I mean, that's promising, you know. And the Jets are building; they're building the right way. And with between him and Leonard and the quarterback they drafted, I mean, the future's bright, absolutely bright.
No. Absolutely. And then the third round is one of my favorite picks. I really like not only this player on the field out of Louisville, Lorenzo Malden, but you got to mm-hmm. love the story, man. I mean, he, you know, like 16 foster homes and just a real tough upbringing, and he's fought through it. What I like about him is he's a three-down linebacker. He could rush the passer. He could also play coverage and stuff the run, which is something we've sorely been missing for a while. But, Marvin, what do you think about his potential for the Jets?
Well, you know, hold on 1 second here. I'm sorry, guys. Yeah, I mean, you said it. The reality is, for a guy like that, what I like is that forget his ability to play the game. That guy's resilient. You know, he's persistent, and he's had every opportunity to cave in, you know. And obviously with his background, man, he's letting you know that he's still here. He still wants to be great. His play in college speaks for itself. And that's what we need, guys who are young, guys who are hungry, guys who want to be here, guys who really appreciate this opportunity, and guys who aren't going to mess it up, you know. So I think it's great that he's a great athlete and he's a great playmaker and he'll do really well for us, but the reality is we're getting a really, really focused and driven guy. And we need that kind of young passion, that young discipline. And I think he'll be great, man. I think this is a great draft. And the first three guys that we spoke of highlight that.
Absolutely. CJ, you want to get in on this a little bit?
Well, I got to say one thing. I got to watch some of the video on Devin Smith. And, man, let me tell you, he just, when he runs, it looks like he's shot out of a cannon. And you know, there were a couple of catches that definitely could be compared to the circus catch that Odell Beckham Jr. made last year against the Cowboys in the Meadowlands. So if he's even 50% of that for the Jets, I mean, I think they just got a huge steal.
I agree. Completely agree. Definitely.
So the fourth round selection, I think, is the one that generated a ton of buzz with Bryce Petty. And, I mean, we've covered the picks before in our shows, but I want to get your thoughts about Bryce Petty. He's coming from that spread system, which more and more colleges are running. But he's got a heck of an arm. He really shows, at least in the interviews and throughout the draft process, the several months that go into it, determination and an intelligence level that at least makes me think in the future he could be good. But I wanted to get your thoughts because most people kind of focus on this and either Jets fans are clamoring to throw him in already, which I think is nuts, or you want to see him develop. But what do you think about that selection, Marvin?
You know, again, it's a thing situation where you really you can't have too many good young quarterbacks, especially you know in a day and age where it may take them a while to develop, some sooner than later. And you don't know what's going to happen with some of these guys. They come in as, you know, Geno was a top player at West Virginia and had crazy numbers. Obviously, he's been trying to really work into that role. This kid out of Texas or Baylor is kind of the same way to me. Really good college player. You know, I think it's good because I think it gives Geno real competition. You know, when we had Michael Vick, I don't know. I'm sure Geno took that serious. But the reality is I think he kind of knew that he was going to be the guy. I believe that in my heart. But when you draft a quarterback in the third round and you draft a guy who, I mean, maybe can have gone late second or late first, somewhere in second, somewhere where Geno's picked, I think Geno recognized that as a message and a threat. But it's NFL. It's competition. And I think it's going to make him better. I think that the Baylor quarterback is a good player, good athlete. But this is the NFL. It's not this college spread. So his ability to throw the ball, you know, at the elite NFL level, that's my question. I don't know, to be honest with you. But he's a Jet. I support him. Again, I think it's great for competition. And may the best man win.
Yeah, I agree with you, Marvin. I think I see Petty is kind of pushing the Matt Sims for that third spot this year.
Yeah.
And,
okay.
You know, Which is fine. I mean, Matt Sims has been around forever. He's really not done a whole lot. But, yeah, I see him as kind of a – well, he hasn't really. I mean, he's had a couple decent preseason games, but he hasn't done a whole lot. Not a whole lot of opportunity either, but,
I hear you,
there were chances.
No, I hear you. Yeah, no, you never know. But then I hear what you're saying. I just you know, my thing with Geno is I'm a diehard Jet, you know, and I support all of our players all the time, including Geno Smith. But when I see other rookie quarterbacks and other second-year quarterbacks, you know, just take off and do really well, I wonder, you know, is the issue with Geno or is the issue with the team around Geno? You know, maybe it's both. But I'm excited about this again, the competition factor. I'm excited to see what this kid does in training camp and how Geno responds. And going into this is Geno's third year, correct?
That's right.
Yeah, I mean he has a couple of running backs now, got some receivers now, you know, a lot. I mean, this should be it. This should be it. We should be seeing the Geno that we envisioned when we drafted him. So, you know, if not, again, I think this kid out of Baylor is a heck of a player. So we'll see.
Yeah. So the thing, the interesting parallel to me is I see. Geno came out of a similar type of spread system out of West Virginia. He didn't have the luxury of sitting back and watching for a year. He was thrown into the fray right away due to injury. And I think that's partially what you're seeing with his development. Now, am I saying he's going to be all-pro quarterback this year or next year in the future? No. But I think the difference is he didn't have the chance to sit back and learn a professional offense like what I think Petty's going to get an opportunity to do. So we'll see what happens this year. Geno, and he still has Fitzmagic to compete with, too, who's very familiar with the Chan Gailey system. So it's going to be exciting times. I'm expecting, you know, the number one thing I want to see is just cut down the turnovers at the quarterback position, whomever it is that is out there throwing the ball,
right,
or cut back the turnovers. Cut them back.
Yeah. Not always, that definitely, man. But in the NFL, I mean, you have to win from the pocket. That's the bottom line. And when you look at the quarterback from Baylor, and you look at Geno and whoever else it may be, you have to ask yourself, is that a quarterback that's going to win a championship for us? Are they a championship caliber quarterback? Because if they're not, we don't have a shot. And that's not the Jets. That's the NFL, period. You know. So when you look at Geno, you have to ask yourself, is he a championship caliber quarterback? Yes or no? You know, and I don't, you know, whether it's Andrew Luck or Colin or even Drew Brees. I mean, it's fair to ask that question for those guys in their third year. You know, so you have to be able to ask that question. If he's not that, then you know, you got to do what you got to do. But I support him. I wish him the best. I think he's a tremendous athlete. And I think it's possible, you know, but we'll see this year, man. We'll see.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, speaking about Geno Smith and staying in the pocket, the next pick the Jets made, Jarvis Harrison, is basically like a three-year starter out of Texas A&M at the guard position. Huge guy from what you could see, and he played pretty well in college. The big question on him is apparently there's some question about his motivation. But I don't know if you know a little bit about that guy or not, but he's a beast. He looks huge. The big question is kind of just, you know, is he motivated? Does he care more about other sports and other endeavors versus playing football?
Yeah.
We'll see. I mean, that's the only pick that you could even somewhat question their motivation on, and that may be overblown.
Yeah, it may be, man, but what I can tell you is this. Just remembering when I was a rookie, and you know, when I played my rookie season, I was with Mike Ditka, and he was the head coach of the Saints in '99. But being a rookie in an NFL training camp where it's hot, it's muggy, you're sore, coaches are yelling at you. If you don't have a deep motivation, you're going to be in trouble, because the only people who, in my opinion, the only people who really get through that first training camp are the guys who either got the big money signing bonus, or the guys who really love it and they're so thankful and they're dying to be there, because it's a tough situation. It really is. And if this kid's lacking motivation, or if there's any hint of that, that could be a problem. But you don't know. You know, they drafted him for a reason. Obviously, they feel differently. You know, we'll trust the leadership of the Jets, and we'll see what happens, man. But concern me when someone's questioning his desire to want to be out there. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. You have to. Yeah. I mean, that's probably the difference between being a third rounder and a fifth rounder, right? Is that little footnote in one of the scouts or a few of the scouts' notebook. And then you have to wonder, is that really true or is it not?
Yeah.
But you know, he could have been a third round kind of guy. So you mentioned Coach Ditka. So I think we talked about this last time we were on air, but Could you give us a crazy Ditka story or something like that? Like, I'm sure he was a very tough coach. Is there anything that stuck out to you when you were playing under him, or you know, anything you saw that would be somewhat entertaining?
A few things, man. You know, the thing about the NFL that I loved, that I struggle with in the quote unquote real world, is that in the NFL, you know, men are men, and it's a man's league in regards to just, you know, men play a game. And it's one of those situations, one of those deals where, you know, I saw Mike Ditka and Alex Molden. Alex Molden was a first-round draft pick out of Oregon. In 99, he was probably in his eighth or ninth year. He was a starting cornerback. And I swear Ditka and Molden damn near got into blows on the field. It was really dramatic and pretty intense, you know. The next day, the guys are hugging. It's all good. No big deal, you know. And, you know, I love that. You know, I love the fact that, you know, Ditka would tell you like it is, and if you didn't like it, you know, you can raise up, and, you know, if they go to blows, it is what it is. But it's not personal. It's just business. And the next day, it's all good. And he did that a lot with players, man. He challenged them a lot. And, but, you know, in the quote-unquote real world, corporate world, you know, if you you criticize somebody or you know, talk about their performance or whatever it may be, I mean, it's a big issue because you got, you know, worry about people's emotions and all that stuff, man. But with Ditka, he was just straightforward. He told you like it was. when he spoke to you, he wasn't concerned with your insecurity or your sensitivity or your daddy issues or your mommy issues. He just spoke to men, you know, like men. And Carl was the same way, you know. And that's, I have a million of those little stories about Dick just calling people. He called me out a bunch of times, you know, and I was just a rookie. But in one sense, you know, I loved it because, hey, Mike Dick was talking to me. And I was a big football fan, so I was always like, man, I can't believe Iron Mike is my coach, you know. But on the other hand, whenever he would speak to me, I was at attention because it's Mike Dick, man, you know. But no, I thought he was cool because he was a straightforward, again, didn't play any games with you, and I respected him. You know, a lot of guys had issue with how he addressed them, but I think he just treated men like men, and I think he's from the old school, and I'm cool. I was cool with that. Other guys weren't, you know.
Absolutely. Yeah, great stuff, man. Great insight into, you know, having actually worked under the great legend Mike Ditka. CJ, did you have any questions for Marvin that you wanted to ask him?
Well, I have to say one thing. I didn't get the opportunity to be on the show, but I did get the opportunity to listen to you guys when you first came on the show. And I'm still in absolute awe that, you know, your dad was former Jet great Marvin Powell. So tell me, what was life like with dad as him being a member of the New York Jets?
Man, you know, it was your normal son and dad relationship, you know. It was normal in our house. Obviously, you know, at that time when the Jets were practicing at Hofstra, we were in East Meadow. And in our small little town, it was kind of a big deal. But, you know, with my dad, I mean, me and my dad would be out. We'd be in the mall. We'd be at a restaurant. We'd be somewhere. And someone would go up to him and say, hey, are you Marvin Powell? And he'd be like, no, I'm not. And he'd say it with a smile and be dead honest. And to be honest with you, man, with him, he was just a very low-key, chill guy. Obviously, people would look at this 6'5", you know, 300-pound black guy. You know, he was the president of the NFLPA. So he was on TV a little bit more than other players and all that stuff. So people would recognize the guy, but he would just completely just downplay it. He really wasn't into that spotlight deal. So for me, I didn't – and this is before the internet. This is before Twitter, before Facebook, before that whole explosion of fame, you know, helped other players out in regards to recognition. He was just a normal dude, man. Very strict with me. You know, very much a disciplinarian. But dad was just, you know, he took his work very serious. And, I mean, he was constantly working out, watching film in the basement, like really, really was big into preparation during the season, off season, big on discipline. But just really a very grounded guy, very just down to earth. When he left football, like he left football. You know, he's on to other things. But Pops was cool, man. It was great to watch a pro, not a pro athlete, but just a pro period, you know, because I was able to take that and it helped me in my own career because I don't believe that I was, you know, the greatest athlete in the world, but I learned a lot about discipline and preparation and, you know, and I've applied that to everything in my life, and I've seen myself excel because of because of what I've learned from him. So it was normal, man. It was like you and your dad. It really was. I kid you not, you know, except for my play for the Jets, you know?
Nice.
So you mentioned something. You mentioned something there, and you were talking about the adjustment to post football. You know, you mentioned about corporate America in your own right, and then also your father. When he quit football, he was done. You know, he retired. He was ready. He had other things to do. Can you talk a little bit about the adjustment period for both of you? Was it a big adjustment for your father and for you?
You know, my dad prepared for it during his career. And I think it took him the last six seasons. Yeah, the last six seasons of his NFL career, he was in law school. All right. So that's how he spent the end of his career, going to law school in the off season. And then when he retired from the NFL, he went right to practicing tax law with Dewey Ballantyne. The thing about my dad is he had a lot of interest outside of football. He loved football. He was passionate about the game. He loved to compete on anything else. And he gave football his all, but he had other interests. So for him, unlike other guys, when he left the game, he left to go enjoy a world that he'd been wanting to be a part of for years, you know. And he ended up doing tax law and entertainment law. He represented a couple of players, and just doing his own thing, writing a lot more. With me personally, you know, one of the things, even to this day, and I've been out of football for years now, but the thing that I still struggle with, especially now in a position as a manager, is when dealing with other people, dealing with other men, with me, it's never personal. If I'm talking to you, I'm not talking from an angry position. I'm not mad at you, but I'm so used to being coached, because I'm so used to constructive criticism that that's one of those things where, you know, I believe that everybody wants to be better, but that's not the truth, you know. And you know, in football, you know, your coach may cuss you out, coach may throw something, coach may grab you, you know. And I don't mean grab your face mask, but he may just. In an effort to get your attention, in an effort to want you to be better, you know, he may get in your face, do that in corporate America. But what I found is that people aren't as motivated. People aren't as inspired to be great. They're really not. And to this day, it's an adjustment, and it's tough for me to understand, why would you be present if you're not here to be the champ? Like, why would you even show up to work if you're not here to want to be the best you can be? You know, and that's how I was raised. And then going to USC and going to the NFL, which is the most cutthroat competitive situation in the world. I mean, that's what made me. So now, you know, as a manager working with people and just trying to lead men and trying to get men and women just to be the best they can be. I mean, sometimes they listen to me like I'm crazy because they don't get it. You know, and I think that's most people in life. I really believe that that's most people. And I struggle with that, just understanding how you want to be present, but not want to be the best.
I hear you. I've been in the same position as management, and I also wanted that. I'm not an ex-NFL player, right? So I think it's just different people have different motivations, right? And, you know, yeah. Some of the people that work for me were there to get a paycheck and see you after 5 o'clock. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's where it
I
comes
do.
From. And yeah. It's a struggle for me to even understand it. And I'm not in the same shoes as you as far as having, you know, been a professional athlete or anything like that. But just from a motivation standpoint, I could definitely see where, you know, I have motivations for different things. And,
yeah.
You know, I struggle with that myself with my employees.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, man, it's just what I find is people just don't, they don't want to compete. You know, they don't want to compete. They don't know how to compete. If they are competing, then it rubs them the wrong way, kind of. It's just weird, man, you know. But, I mean, it doesn't matter if you're Bill Belichick or you're Bill Gates. You don't think Bill Gates, at a certain point in his career, realized he was in a serious competition and he took it to another level? Of course he did, you know. Like, and it's just what separates the haves and the have-nots. We can get into economics and race and socioeconomics, but the difference between the have and the have-nots, in my opinion, one of the biggest factors is just that competitive spirit, man, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what it comes down to. I mean, I think we've become a culture where, you know, people want to blame Bush. They want to blame Obama. Man, how about blaming yourself? Like, because there's no accountability, I feel like, you know? And it's just whether it's a football roster, like an NFL roster, or your sales team. I mean, you want to build a championship roster full of just people who are just go-getters, you know? And I feel like in life, I'm seeing less and less go-getters, you know? I don't get it, man. I can go on and on, as you can tell.
I think that's something we all could relate to. Anyone listening to this show right now, I know you usually tune into us to listen. We usually talk football. It seems kind of light, but, you know, we could get intelligent here, too. And you're absolutely right. There's less of a motivation for some reason. And it's not just something that we're just noticing and, oh, it's always been there. I think that over the course of the past few decades, that kind of work ethic has kind of eroded from what it used to be that made this country and its citizens great. And,
yeah.
And not just this country, but globally. I think there's certainly people that try. There's certainly people that are motivated. But it's a little less and less as you go forward.
Yeah. But, you know, one of the things about, you know, NFL fans that's always been weird to me is that, you know, they'll watch their favorite player on TV. and they'll have an opinion about this person when they get traded or if they, you know, want more money. And I don't think the average fan really understands how hard that athlete has worked to get to where he's at. I mean, granted, he's really athletic and maybe he has some God-given ability, but do you know how many people out there are big, fast, and strong? A lot. A lot of people are big, fast, and strong, you know. And what separates, you know, a first-round draft pick or an NFL player or a guy who's in a training camp from the next guy isn't just how big he is, man. It's his that inner beast, you know, that he has that most people don't have, you know. And, I mean, you know, I've always questioned why NFL fans, you know, all fans, you know, they get on players for wanting more money. Because those guys are getting beat up, and they realize they can't do this forever. Or how come, you know, if they want to leave a team? Because they recognize how hard they work, and maybe their best opportunity is with somebody else, you know? And I don't know, man. But it's, you know, this I guess the whole point here is just that, you know, all these guys that the Jets have drafted have worked really hard. I'm hearing from my buddy. I told you my friend is now a coach for the Jets. He's given me a lot of really good insight about how hard they're working in camp on stuff. And I'm motivated because I'm happy to hear that Bowles has got these guys just, you know, with that fire, you know. And I'm looking to see that ambition and that desire translate into a championship because it's been too long, my friends. It's been way too long.
Oh, yes, absolutely. So speaking about Bowles and then the new front office, the coaching staff, what's your assessment so far? I know it's early, but are you happy with the changes that have been made from, you know, last year to this year? Obviously,
love
it's a big
love
change.
It. You know, to be honest with you, and I'm biased because, again, he was one of my coaches. I wish we could have kept Dennis Thurman. I wish we could have kept DT. I had my dad played with him, and I coached. And I played for him at USC. With that said, I like Gailey. Bobby April, who's a special teams coach, he was my coach when I was with the Saints. I told you my friend Dalen McCutcheon is coaching the DBs, and I know he has tremendous football knowledge, and he can really help those guys out. I like Todd Bowles because I just like Todd Bowles. But I like it, man. I think change is good. And in this situation, we've made a really positive change. And I'm excited about it, man. I really am. I like the GM. I like how you get the draft. I like our free agents. I like our off-season pickups. I mean, we're going in the right direction. There's no doubt about that.
So what you mentioned the special teams coach, and that's the one thing. We've had a new special teams coach every single year for the past 4 years now. What do you think will help with having this particular special teams coach this year, if you can offer your opinion there?
So just from my experience, man, Bobby April, really spirited guy, high-energy guy, good guy, really good guy, but a real football coach at his core. I mean, he'll get into you a little bit now, which is a good thing. But he's very passionate about special teams, very detailed. Again, high energy, great attitude, and just to be honest with you guys, I was never a big special teams fan ever. With that said, that wasn't because of Bobby. Bobby was great, but Bobby will definitely bring the fire and just, you know, bring that desire to special teams, and his coaching skill set's really high. And it's a great pickup for the Jets. There's no doubt about that. And we'll see, you know, with some good block punts, some good returns. I mean, we'll see big improvement because of Bobby April. No doubt about it.
All right. Excellent insight from our good buddy MP3. I wanted to ask you, because you had mentioned, you know, obviously there's a ton of rookies getting brought in. There's undrafted free agents being brought in. You've been through the process, and I'm sure at a certain point in your career you had to face a cutdown that you didn't make. And I wanted to just get your impressions. I know it. I mean, it has to suck, but just kind of give me a little bit of insight into what that feeling is, you know, how you deal with it.
You know, with me, the first time I got cut, I had gotten cut by the Green Bay Packers in 2000. And at the time, the Packers had traded for me. They initiated a trade. They traded for me. I went to Green Bay, and I was having a great camp, all right? Ended up having an issue with my hamstring, which limited my ability to do anything, and they ended up cutting me. Now, when I got cut, I knew that my hamstring was the issue. It wasn't me as a player. I knew I was having a great camp. With that said, it's demoralizing, man, because you realize that, you know, football, you can work your whole life to get an NFL tryout, and you may just, if you get one, you may just get one, and you don't know if you're ever going to get that call again. And I think that's the worst part about it. You know, in life, you can be a salesperson or a doctor or a lawyer and get fired. You'll get another job. But in pro sports, I like that. You can be big, fast, strong, and dedicated and never get a job. So the worst part about getting cut is just you're on that plane headed home, and you realize that may be it. You may have worked, you know, the last 10 years for that one shot, and it's done. You know, that's a reality for people. So it sucks, man. And hopefully you've done something to prepare for something else. But it's as low as it can get, to be honest with you.
Yep. So great insight, Marvin. And I'd imagine that's exactly what it'd be like. And so what you mentioned, that preparing for something else in life, obviously your father did that. You obviously have a post-football career and have done pretty well for yourself as well. Mm-hmm. I think that's, you know, when you see players and stuff like that that retire and they don't have those plans, that's where you see some troubles coming up. So I think it's very important, like you said, having other interests and trying to concentrate on post-football career. So Marvin, I wanted to actually let you kind of talk a little bit about some of the projects that you're working on. Just let all the listeners know, you know, some of the new things that's going on with you, and you know, the mic's all yours.
You know, since football, I've done a couple of things. I actually came down to Miami and went to law school for about a year and a half, and ended up leaving law school to get into the invention business, if you will, new product developments. And I've spent the last 10 or so years working with inventors, working with people who have app ideas that they want to get developed. I've been working with Idea Design Studio in Zaparoo. Zaparoo is the app division. Idea Design Studio deals with just any kind of invention you may have. Right now, we're focusing really on Zaparoo and getting a few products out. And we actually have two really good app ideas that listeners can find online. One of the app ideas is called Muscle Reminder, and it's from a guy in Utah named Ryan Howie, and it's a fitness app. It's a workout app. It's an app that gives you an opportunity to just have a much more efficient workout, just better understanding your body and what you should be doing. Ryan's in the process of actually raising the funds to further develop the app. And if you Google Ryan Howie Muscle Reminder, you'll see his information there on Kickstarter and some other sites as well, Facebook and Twitter. But Muscle Reminder should be a great app. There's another app that, again, is where we're in development in right now from Teola Queen. Teola Queen is in Buffalo. She has an app that's focusing as a background changer, basically just allows you to take a picture and change the background of that picture. Teola Queen will have a Kickstarter campaign that will launch, that it should launch at some point this evening. But not just Teola Queen and Ryan Howie, but for anybody who wants to see, they can go to my Google Plus page, just Marvin Powder III on Google Plus, or just go to Zaparoo, Zaparoo.com, and you'll see everything that we've been doing with apps. So for anyone who has an idea, really any kind of invention, even though we're heading more into the apps now, any kind of idea, any kind of app idea that you have, definitely just feel free to call, email. You can call me directly, call my office line directly at 305-377-1046. 305-377-1046, Marvin Powell III with Zaparoo and Idea Design Studio. Any questions you have about the invention process, app development, let me know. I can help you out.
Well, Marvin, definitely great stuff going on with you with the app development and you know, the inventions. feel free to send us the some of the contact info. We'll share it with the listeners after the show as well. We'll send a few links out, so just send it over to us.
I appreciate it.
We'll make
I
sure
will.
That goes out, too. So I know you're a busy man, Marvin, so I don't want to keep you too long, but I do want CJ to have one more opportunity maybe to ask you a couple more questions, seeing as how I've been
Please.
Hogging the talk time with you.
Marvin, overall, what do you think of the Jets' progress in the offseason? And this is kind of like a two-part question.
Yeah.
And what do you foresee for the upcoming future for the Jets? I mean, does this team, with the schedule that they're looking at right now, does this Jets team have the ability to be competitive this year and once and for all put the ghost of the 4-12 season last year behind them?
All right. So with the schedule, you know, the NFL schedule is always going to be tough. And with the NFL, there are no easy games. Trying to determine the strength of schedule from last year to me has always been crazy. I don't understand that. The bottom line is there are 16 games, and every single one's going to be tough, period. In regards to the direction of the team, again, from the head coach to the general manager, to my buddy, Dalen McCutcheon and Coach April, they're doing a great job. I genuinely believe, and I'm being as objective as I can, guys. I believe green, I mean, sincerely. I believe that they're really making the right moves, and I like what they're doing really at every position, from the offseason to their free agents to the draft. I like the direction that we're going in. I think a lot of it's going to come down to that quarterback position. And I think that Geno has a lot more to say. And I think we're going to see a better and a more evolved Geno Smith. I really believe that. I also believe that quarterback out of Baylor is a monster. And I think that he can grow into something special. And that's a great situation, because I'd love to have, you know, Geno be the third-year player that we want him to be, and this other kid come along and end up being something special too. So I really believe that we will be competitive. I think that in the division, I think that the Patriots got some problems. This whole Deflategate thing, I think, is being blown way out of proportion. But I think that the NFL is going to do something to Brady, and they're in trouble. I think they're in trouble. The Dolphins have made some good moves, but the Jets really can make a run this year at the division. If the NFL comes down on Brady, that division's up for grabs. I genuinely believe that. This could be the springboard to our whole situation. So I'm looking for a competitive year. I really am.
All right, that's good. Yeah, as a matter of fact, yeah. Carlos and I had actually talked about, I hate to bring up the Deflategate because it's been just talked about and just beaten like a dead horse.
Yeah.
Beyond rigor mortis. But, you know, so one of the things that Carlos and I we're actually in agreement on is that we actually hope that the NFL does absolutely nothing with Brady. And the reason being is because when the Jets face them in week 7, when we beat them, I want to beat them at 100%, no excuses, no questions asked. Because I could just hear it now. The Patriot Homer fans that should the Jets either sweep the Patriots or split with the Patriots, which is something that we seem to do almost every single year, that there's always going to be that excuse. Oh, well, Brady wasn't playing and we weren't at full strength. So it's like, I just want the New York Jets once and for all to just shut the Patriots Homer fan base up once and for all time. And to just out there and just to absolutely decimate them with Brady at the helm, get him sacked like 6 times, him throw like 4 picks, have like both Revis and Crow run one back for a touchdown each, and for like Geno to just throw for like 400 yards.
You know, guys, honestly, I think that the whole Deflategate being blown out of proportion, and it's sad. I think it's as a guy who knows, I think it'd be insane to punish him at all. But it is going to happen. And at the end of the day, guys, I mean, beating the Patriots without Tom Brady doesn't make us the Patriots. I mean, just being objective about it, these guys have been to like 6 Super Bowls in the last 12 years. Okay. So I mean, yeah, we can make that kind of run, sure, but I mean that's a pretty steep mountain to climb. With or without him, I don't care if he's there or not. I just want to beat him, and I don't care what the Patriots fans say about that situation. If we beat the Patriots, then we won the game. That's what it is. Whoever your quarterback is, he's a pro quarterback. Here's what it is. You got to coach him up, baby. You know. So, you know, that's the truth. I mean, look at it. When Brady went down a couple of years ago, my boy Matt Castle goes in there, wins 10 games. You know, had a Pro Bowl season, but it's pro football, man. Guys get banged up. It is what it is. And whoever is in there is their quarterback, and that's why you coach.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Absolutely right. Absolutely right. Yeah. So me and CJ had talked about that whole situation, and I think I had kind of swayed him I'm not going to be the popular Jets fan podcast host by saying this, but I agree with you in that I don't think that a huge suspension is really needed. I think most people, specifically Jets fans and really fans of all the other teams that aren't the Patriots, are just kind of they want to lynch Brady and Belichick because they're just mad at them for winning. I hate them, you know, but that's not – I don't want to win that way. And it would be inconsistent. Aaron Rodgers came out a couple years ago, or maybe even last year, said he pumps up the football a little bit over what it should be. You know what happened
Everybody
to him?
Everybody does. Dude,
nothing. Nothing happened
exactly.
to him.
Exactly. Yeah. Every punter and every kicker has a preference for how they want the ball. There's no doubt about that. I mean, since Pop Warner, I mean, especially at the collegiate level, at the BCS conference schools, every quarterback, kicker, and punter has a preference as to what they want. In the NFL, every single quarterback has a preference as to what they want with that ball. It's insane to pick on Brady. It's ignorant to me, you know. But it is what it is. So.
All right. Well, Marvin, I wanted to thank you once again for coming on. And this next time come on, let's not have it be like a 2-year gap or whatever it's been.
Come on
back whenever you want. And, you know, we'll get us your contact information. We'll send it out to the listeners, buddy.
I will. Guys, thank you guys very much. I appreciate you. And I look forward to doing this again.
All right, man. All right. There he is. One of my favorite interviews, really, in the history of our show, CJ. Marvin's just a great person to talk to. Really,
Absolutely.
Really bright guy. You know, you could tell he gets his intelligence from his father's, like a lawyer after school or after football, and just really one of my favorite people to talk to that we've had on the show over the past couple of years. So I'm glad you were able to come on too and kind of talk to him this time, because he actually had to sub for you the last time we were on air.
Yep.
So, all right.
Yeah, back in my days of witness protection, so you know.
Yeah, I don't even know where – I have no idea what you were doing, but you couldn't make it that day. And Marvin was available. He's like, hey, I'll co-host a show with you. So, there you go. All right, so let's get to some other Jets news going on real quick before we wrap up the show. It's going to be a little bit of an early show this week. I think we covered the Jets' history and then some by speaking with MP3 about his father.
Yeah, exactly.
And in his time with the Jets and growing up as the son of a Jet, and a great one at that. So I actually got a couple sound clips from Coach Bowles. Talking a little bit about his philosophy and some of the other things, and just listening to this, it's a breath of fresh air in my opinion. So I'll just let Coach Bowles speak right now.
We want to have accountability, you know, first and foremost when we get the guys in. We want to address, obviously, we want to get better at the corner issues. We want to solidify and have less turnovers at the quarterback position. We want to get bigger plays down the field. We want to be tougher up front on both sides of the ball, and going in, that's what we're going to try to do.
It's just
nice.
Right here in the word accountability coming out of his mouth, because we've been lacking it for a while, if you ask me, buddy. We've been lacking it for a while, so it's good to hear the competition's there. He's kind of a no-nonsense guy from what I can understand, so definitely excited. And I've officially purged our show of any Rex Ryan clips.
So, for those
of you that are still hanging on to the Rex Ryan, sorry, we are officially Rex Ryan free.
Amen.
So, you know, So we've had the rookie mini camp going along the past couple days, and they're wrapping it up today, although the media is not allowed in there today. Do you have any impressions overall from what you've seen or heard about the rookie mini camp? Anything stand out to you there?
I think the big rookie, the biggest thing that stands out to me about the rookie mini camp is that Leonard Williams seems to be making an immediate impact. And, you know, he's already showing flashes. He's already showing that he is hungry. He's playing for that roster spot. As far as the other rookies are there, you know, they're all playing very, very hard. They're all battling for the roster spots. They all want to show that they have something, something unique to contribute to this roster. So far, I'm very, very pleased, as opposed to years past when we've gone to, when we've covered the rookie minicamp, and we've left it with questions, with, okay, is this guy's head really in it? Can this guy sustain this this amount of passion, or you know, how is he going to fit into this offense or fit into this defense or so on? I just think that this is the first year that Jet fans could actually take a look at the rookie minicamp and actually say, like, okay, all right, cool. I feel pretty good coming out of this. I feel pretty good coming out of this.
So one of the things that's coming out to me on the rookie camp, and there's some guys that have made some headways. Coach Bowles came out and said, though, you know, day two, it looks sloppier than day one. Overall, you expect it to be sloppy. These kids are coming together for the first time, getting to know professional concepts. So there's a little bit of sloppiness to it. But the one thing that stands out to me is Jets fan that is clamoring to start Bryce Petty before the end of the season and basically throwing dirt on the carcass of Geno Smith and Ryan Fitzpatrick, even though Fitzpatrick hasn't even been able to really do much because of his injury. But, you know, I see this in the media. It's not
alcohol,
just something. I see it in the media, like, do you realize this is exactly what is wrong with what the Jets did with Mark Sanchez, Geno Smith? You go down on the line. They ruined him. They ruined them. Not, would they have been Pro Bowl quarterbacks anyway? Who knows? But Geno Smith, I don't care what anyone says, was thrown in there too early. Because he had to be. There was no one else there.
Exactly.
Rex Ryan got Mark Sanchez hurt, so they threw Geno Smith into the fray too early. Mark Sanchez was thrown in too early. Pete Carroll even came out and said he shouldn't have come out of college when he did. So you know it was too early. So now what do we want to do? Oh, let's just throw Bryce Petty in there, who has never taken a snap under center, let alone run a pro-style offense. Let's slap him in there and name him the savior, and then when he's ruined, then we get to throw dirt on his carcass and let the next rookie come along.
Well, you know why? Because of the fact that Jet fans, not just Jet fans, but just football fans in general, they take a look at what happened with Russell Wilson. They take a look at what happened with Andrew Luck. And they are so enamored with that quarterback that can just directly come out of college and make that transition into the pro game seamlessly, like these two quarterbacks that I just named were able to do. And the problem with that conception is that not everyone is able to make that transition seamlessly. That being said, Bryce Petty is nowhere near NFL ready, nowhere near capable of running this offense or leading this team right now at this moment in time. And because of the fact that we still have Geno Smith and Ryan Fitzpatrick and even Matt Sims, believe it or not, the forgotten man, Matt Sims, still on this roster, okay, Jet fans, football fans in general, you guys just need to be patient and just stop this stuff about having Bryce Petty start game one of this year's NFL season. We need to stop it. Because it is not going to happen. It's not going to happen on no matter what God you pray to. Okay? It's not going to happen. Let the system work its course. Let the man develop. And then if he's ready, if the coaches think he's ready, then he will see his playing time. Until then,
you know, and
They need to stop with the clamoring about Bryce Petty going out there and being your starter week one. They need to stop it.
Yeah, I mean, if Geno struggles, there's Fitzpatrick for that. If Fitzpatrick doesn't win the job outright. Petty is drafted in the fourth round for a reason. He's a developmental kid. And while he has all what is quote-unquote the intangibles, meaning he seemed to be a pretty smart kid and seems to be a hard worker based on the comments that you see around the league, not just the Jets, but other teams that evaluated him, he needs time to adjust. It's a completely different game. And throwing him out there to the Wolves so that we could then look back and say, oh, the Jets never drafted quarterback, and when they do, they stink. I mean, that's ruining him for no reason, at all. So, and it's not a majority of Jets fans. I think there's a lot of great Jets fans that are listening right now that would never entertain in a million years slapping Bryce Petty out there, as raw as he is, during this season. But there's a contingent out there that, guys, wake up. No, you don't want to ruin this kid this way, this quickly.
Exactly. So, you know, so
there's my rant for the day, CJ. I'm all out of I'm really not that upset with the Jets, but, you know, that's one of the things I saw going around over the past couple days. I think he threw two or three pick sixes in rookie camp already. So, I mean, he's showing you he's got to learn this system. You know, it's not going to come right away. Let the kid develop. I think he could be good. There's no reason why he couldn't. If he puts his mind to it, he picks up the NFL game and the speed. But let the process work for once. I know we're a starving fan base. We haven't had a Super Bowl since, geez, I think my mother was a teenager when it happened. But we can't just rush these kids out there thinking they're the next Russell Wilson or Tom Brady or whatever it is. You know, Aaron Rodgers sat behind Brett Favre for a couple of years. Tom Brady wasn't even Tom Brady until Bledsoe was hurt. Now, unless you're a Peyton, you're probably going to start right away.
Yeah, I hear you. Well, we have another caller on the line. I want to bring him in.
Absolutely.
How you doing, caller? What's your name?
Hey, John, you guys still got time for a call or show's ending?
No, we
got time for you, John.
Come on. Yeah, okay. Come on down, John.
Excellent. I just got a question about last call. I'm a big college fan, big Bryce Petty fan, and I agree with you guys. First of all, I think he's been getting blasted a little bit too much because when you look at the guy, he's got all the physical traits, he's got the intangibles. And I happen to think they struck gold because, one, I believe in McGagnon. We finally got a personnel guy in there. Two, the idea it comes from his bright system. Yeah, he does, but this idea that he can't do it is ridiculous. Yes, he's got to learn how to take the ball from under center. Yes, he's got to learn the 3-5, 7-foot step drops. But this idea that he can't do it bothers me, number one. And number two, I don't think this coach staff is going to make the same bad decisions or the same mistakes that the last ones did. As much as I was a Rex guy, they were offensively challenged when it came to coaching the side of the ball. This kid should only be put in there when he shows that he's ready. Listen, if he pulls a Russell Wilson and he shows bold and the GM that he's ready, then fine. But I don't want to see that kid until he understands how to read a defense, you know, how to take command of the huddle, and just how to, you know, operate as an NFL quarterback, period.
Amen.
John,
I
can't disagree with you at all. You're exactly right. And I want to talk to your point about, you know, there's a lot of people that say can't. And it's hard to say you can't do something if you've never been asked to do something.
Why
in the
first is it assumed that he's not going to be able to make it because he plays in a spread? Because there are plenty of spread quarterbacks who made it in the league. And honestly, and I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, 80% of the league runs a spread now. We used to call it the run and shoot. Basically, they call it a spread.
Well,
yep,
you're right, John.
Right.
Guess what? We're going to be running a variation of this year under Chan Gailey.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of a spread, right? I mean, more and more NFL teams are adopting it.
And he always tells his system to the personnel he has, which a good coach should do, instead of trying to stick like a, you know, a square peg in a round hole. A coach should always tell their system to the personnel they have until they get the pieces to run the system that they want. And the thing I like about Chan Gailey, and a lot of people kind of felt like when the Jets signed him, like it was uninspiring, kind of like I did the minute Herm Edwards signed Paul Hackett, I died. But Ken Daly's a good offense coordinator because he's not beholden to one thing. He's a bright guy. He knows how to use his pieces. I think Woody Johnson hit a home run with the two hires, and it's real funny. I'll say this one last thing here, which you guys got to say. It's funny because when you look, it is so refreshing to hear McCagnan speak as opposed to the last two guys. One guy who couldn't speak was an Ivy League grad, which I could never figure out, but he ran and hid. Then the other guy, all he said was everything's a process. He said nothing. He could speak for 2 hours and said nothing. It is such a breath of fresh air to see this guy, to see Todd Bowles come in there and not tweak the Patriots and not boast of going to the Super Bowl. They're professionals. They got a gift on draft day, and they took it. They didn't do anything stupid. They have a philosophy. They stuck to it. They're not all over the place. They're not bringing in Tim Tebow's. It is so, after 34 years of dying with this team, it is so nice to have what we have now. And I can't ever figure out how you hired these two guys now. And 2 years ago, you hired Idzik. I would love to have been in the interview room because I don't know what Woody saw. Thanks.
Well, see, the smartest thing that he did was the fact that he this time finally got somebody who was actually knowledgeable in football and football personnel in Charlie Cassidy. Now, I remember listening while this process was going on the Mike Francesa show. He had said something to the effect of, well, Charlie Cassidy's just going to throw anybody in this job. He's got no skin in the job. He has no, he doesn't care. He doesn't care if the Jets fail or so on and so forth. You want to know something? That could be further from the truth as far as I'm concerned. Charlie Cassidy staked his football reputation on the hiring of Mike Maccagnan and Todd Bowles. That's why we now have the position, we now have the pieces in place that we have, because Maccagnan finally sat down with Woody Johnson and told him that, hey, look, if you want me to build a winner, we need to build it from the ground up. We need to get good football people in here. We need to get people with a high football IQ and who can actually draft talent. You know, it's one thing to be a bean counter and to take a look at the salary cap, but it's another thing to be able to spot talent. And fortunately, the Jets got both.
Mm-hmm. Hey, John, I wanted to ask you before you head off. You know, one of the things that I noticed this year versus the last year was, you know, I had to talk myself into some of these picks last year. I don't know if you – I wanted to see what – and this year I didn't. This year I could kind of logically see who we're picking. We were kind of building and filling needs. Just wanted to get your thoughts on the draft and compare this year to last year and your thought process when you were watching or when you found out about the picks.
When you look at Lennon Williams, you got a gift, you took it, you had a philosophy. This regime has a philosophy, and you can see it when they're drafting. As far as the picks this year compared to the last couple of drafts, you're right. I'm just being honest with you guys. You can take it from where it's come from. I'm telling you guys the honest truth, I have no reason to lie. I sat in front of the TV. And when I saw they traded up a couple of years ago in the second round, I knew we needed a receiver. Alshon Jeffries is sitting there. He comes out a year early, he's a top 10 pick. He didn't have a great senior year, but not great by his standards. But he's still, to me, I don't know how a year later, you go back to school, you know, your senior year, you get your degree, and now you're not a top 20, top 15 pick that you would have been a year earlier. So I'm thinking it's him. There were no Stephen Hills here. They're trying to compare Devin. You look in the New York Post today, they're comparing Devin Smith to the Ryan Yarborough, the Alexander Dykes. No, it's not that. It's not Rich Coates, I think, these guys.
No,
Lorenzo Molden was a smart pick. I love the guy in Louisville. He's a tough, tenacious player. These guys did everything right this year. Every pick I looked at made sense. It made sense for value. You know what? Did you bring it up? And I say this one last thing, and I want to hear your response to this. I'm not gonna criticize McCagnan because he's a dream come true for us right now. If the honeymoon's over in a couple of years, you'll have me bitching about it. But the one thing I kind of don't get, the one area of this team, aside from a quarterback, I think is hurting a little bit, is the offensive line. While Al Collins is sitting there, I don't get it. The Jets apparently made a big bid for him. They had a good draft. They made smart, solid picks. Guys went where they were supposed to go. I kind of don't get going after him hard in unrestricted free agency, but not using that seven-round pick if you wanted him that bad. That's the only thing I didn't get. But I love the draft, and I didn't have to talk myself into any of the picks. You're 100% right, because there's a philosophy now.
Absolutely, John. So I think with Lyle Collins, the reason that a lot of teams, I mean, it's not just the Jets, everybody didn't pick him with their seventh-round pick just about.
I don't get it. I don't know if it's because they figured maybe you wouldn't sign him, wait a year and go back to the draft. I don't get it.
That's exactly it. His agent had kind of put out a note on his behalf saying, if my client is drafted after round three, we're just not going to sign. We're going to re-enter the draft. And I think that scared off a lot of teams because they took it serious. And so then, now Lyle Collins is in the situation where he gets to pick from all the different teams. He ended up going with the Cowboys. From what I understand, 30 out of the 32 teams were definitely inquiring, and the New York Jets were one of them. But the reason that he didn't get selected by anybody in the seventh round isn't because of talent or because these people don't know what they're doing. It's because
he would have went back and got that out.
That would have bailed him out, and then he could have gotten a first-round grade next year. Or, he would have been a first-rounder this year, if not for what's looking more and more like an unfortunate situation that he's not involved with, but it broke at the wrong time, and it cost him millions of dollars.
Hey, guys, thank you for the time. It was awesome. It's great hearing this every week. I appreciate it. I'll tune in again next
John,
time.
Yeah,
thank you very much,
time,
man.
All right,
John.
John,
you're welcome to come in anytime, man.
I will. Have a good day, guys.
All right, thanks.
All right. Excellent insight from one of the Jets fans that I think is on the intelligent side. I mean, I agree with what everything what John was saying, and it's refreshing to hear this. Like he was talking about the draft, it makes sense. The players we got made sense. It wasn't. There's a couple things, but I'd be really petty, no pun intended, if I were going to start criticizing hardcore the trade for Zach Stacy. I said it last week. It doesn't make a ton of sense. But what are we giving up, a seventh rounder? I'm not going to kill Maccagnan for that.
Yeah, not at all.
So speaking of Maccagnan, I wanted to play a little clip from him because I went a little crazy with the sound clips today. Talking a little bit about his own philosophy, this is prior to the draft. But I think it speaks volumes listening to this now after having seen what this front office did. So here's the Magic Mac Daddy.
I think at the end of the day, really, when you think about what we do, we look at all these players and we try to figure out, we try to project what their return is going to be. So we try to think of, hey, what is their ceiling? And correspondingly with that, we look at what their risks are. So for as much as we look at what these guys can be, we try to figure out what will make them fail and not achieve that. So I don't know if I necessarily have a feeling of saying, hey, do you take potential over a safer pick? I think what you try to do is you kind of weigh both of them. It's sort of a balancing act, and you try to think of who's going to be for that pick the best player in theory. And if you think there's more risk in a player, even though he may have more upside, you may take what may be perceived to be the safer pick, but it's kind of a risk and return. So I don't know if I don't think I really have one particular answer. It's really when we look at a player, we literally rank him from 1 to 300 on our board. And in theory, what you're trying to do is think of the guy, it's not potential over risk per se. It's kind of a balance of both.
That's exactly what happened. That was pre-draft. And, the refreshing thing is, there's going to be times when we criticize Mike Maccagnan. I don't want anyone thinking that, oh, man, we're just, licking his you-know-what. I'm not going to say what it is, but licking something of his that you shouldn't be licking. That's not the type of show we are. But I haven't seen too much to really turn me off to him yet. I'm sure there are some things that are going to come up that I don't agree with. There's already a couple. I think we could have addressed the offensive line a little bit more in free agency than just bringing in James Carpenter. I think bringing in Zach Stacy on top of Steven Ridley and Chris Ivory is a little crazy. I mean, we could have used a fast third down type back. But overall, I'm optimistic about the season, and I'm not going to kill him. That doesn't mean that he won't make a mistake. That doesn't mean that Mike Maccagnan and Todd Bowles are perfect. It's a first time for them for doing this job, for both of them. And there will be slip-ups down the road. And we'll call them on
exactly.
We will both call them on that. But there hasn't been too much this offseason that I'm frowning about. There's some minor things, here or there. Maybe I'd do a little differently. But you know what? Overall, for the first-time GM, first-time head coach, I like it. I like it. And it's been a while since I've liked it.
Yeah, I agree. I absolutely agree. I mean, again, just listening to him talk, you can tell the intelligence. You can tell where he's got a clear direction. He's got a clear plan, what he wants to do. And, again, this was something that I brought up, I believe, on the last show and even in shows past. You know, he's a GM that has a plan A, a plan B, a plan C, and a plan D. So he's got all his ducks in a row, and he knows that if the first part is not going to work, then it's going to start with plan B, and he actually has a viable plan B, which will actually help this franchise. Whereas John Idzik just said that he had plan B, but he really didn't have a plan B. So, you know, it's going to take some time for Maccagnan and Bolts to really put their imprint on this franchise and also on this team. And I apologize for the noise in the bathroom. I apologize for the noise in the background over here. I got my water pump running in the background.
Do you have a cement truck over there?
No, not at all. But, hey, listen, remember, this show started in a garage, so, you know, I'm back in the garage to channel the passion from when this show started in the garage. So, so
it sounds like you have a cement truck over there.
Oh, yeah. So, but in any...
So,
in any case,
another thing I wanted to touch on, Todd Bowles was in the presser, I believe yesterday, talking about his selection of what our friend Dennis Agapito would refer to as the fossil they dug up named Chan Gailey. Coach Bowles addressed the question asked to him about why he chose Chan Gailey.
Personality and scheme, than it is a lot of things. You have to find the right guy. There's plenty of good ones out there. I thought Chan, for his personality with the offense, he's even keeled as far as run pass. You know, he's not one or the other. He's even keeled one way or the other. He has a good running game and a good passing game. And everybody that I've known, he's a great guy. He's a great individual.
He can win. And he can span the young ones as well as the old ones. So that made it a very good choice for me as far as the fit that I wanted and what I wanted my offense to look like. And Chan was the guy playing against him over a couple of years when I was in Miami and he was in Buffalo. Kind of liked some of the things he did and adjustments he made, so that made him very appealing to me.
So there you have it, out of the horse's mouth himself, why the fossil Chan Gailey was dug up from the earth and resurrected as an NFL offensive coordinator.
Yep, there we go. And you want to know something? I still think it was a good choice. I think that Chan Gailey does, regardless of the fact that he's been out of football for 2 years, I still think he brings a lot to the table. And he may not have been coaching, but I could definitely guarantee you that he's been keeping abreast of what's been going on as far as NFL offenses. He's probably watched a ton of tape. You know, when you're a football coach, let's face it, football's in your blood. Okay, so for him to be as far removed as everyone seems to think, and, you know, like Dennis was calling him the fossil the other day. We still need to get that clip, by the way. And
I know we do.
You know,
that was actually pretty funny.
Yeah. So, you know, but in any event, I still think that he'll be a viable source for this New York Jets offense going forward. I expect them to do much better. I expect Geno Smith to perform better. And I think that if you put Geno Smith in a system that he's comfortable with, he will, in fact, thrive, and he will, in fact, prove that he is a viable option in this league. So, but only time will tell. So we'll see what happens on week one.
Yeah, well, we got a long way till week one, buddy, and a whole lot of conjecture,
exactly,
speculation, and other useless endeavors that we choose to partake in, because that's what we love talking about is football.
That's right.
Before we end the show, I wanted to give a quick shout-out again. We talked last week just a little bit about the new endeavors we're joining with New York fans, NewYorkJetsFans.com. Guys that started up the Fire John Idzik movement, we're part of a all-star-type lineup of podcasts dedicated to New York Jets. I wanted to mention some of those so you guys could go check them out. First of all, I want to mention our good friends Tyson and Joe over on Talk Jets Radio. They're on Tuesdays. No Fly Zone Radio, our buddies over across the pond, they just dropped another podcast a little bit earlier this week, so go check that out. Jetstream Radio, which is still putting together what they're going to put out there, but I'm sure it will be great. And then Turn on the Jets, a wonderful Jets website dedicated to bringing you news and to real information. So that's the lineup, guys. I'm excited to be a part of it. I think it's going to be awesome for listeners. You can get your fill of Jets content throughout the entire week. Go check out those respective podcasts and stay tuned for June because that's when everything's coming out. Okay. So I think it's time that we're going to wrap up the show here, everybody. So once again, thank you for joining us. It's been a wonderful, wonderful time with you, and we'll see you on the flip side.
That's all I got.